broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
And a very good morning to you guys. And I am back in Victoria with you.
Welcome back, Steph. You've come to join the party.
I'm not sure it's lucky, but very, very happy to be home seeing Joel. But I'm sure give it a week of a novelty and working in each other's space, it's going to be hard to deal with.
We're sharing a computer at the moment, and already I want to give her a hip and shoulder and say, move over.
that must be true, love.
Absolutely, absolutely. But how are you guys going? How's the week been?
It's been quick. I thought it was Thursday today, but it's actually Friday.
Yeah, incredible, isn't it? How quickly things are going in lockdown.
Yeah, it's a bonus, though, your week's going quicker.
Yeah, it's this point now that we should have been coming out of the stage three lockdown. It's 6 weeks since we went into the stage three. This week is also as long as it's been since we were in the last lockdown in Melbourne. So I'm finding a lot of people are getting very antsy. Just they're subconsciously, they're expecting to come out of it and be out of it now. And the sun's starting to shine just a little bit more, and everyone's bodies and minds are just trying to break free, and they can't.
Yeah. Well, on that note, actually, we do have a special guest with us today, and that's Ross DiVincenzi, who is the owner of RossFit. And we will actually get to Ross, but good morning, Ross, and welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to helping out your audience with some talk around, health and mental well-being during these crazy times.
Absolutely. I think everyone needs a little bit of that health support at the moment, and to stop the drinking and eating. So, Ross, we will come back with you not too long away, but we might actually open the topic first of all today just on speaking to Brett. You're going to speak to us a little bit about the population statistics since COVID's hit.
Yeah, we were touching on some other property-related data last week, and the biggest driver of property prices over time from a demand perspective is typically population growth and the need for new housing or additional housing. And obviously with our borders being shut, that's going to have a severe impact on what our population growth is. So I've got some statistics to say what's happened since obviously the COVID restrictions have come in, and also a little bit of information about what's happened in a previous pandemic. So the last 10 years, the population growth of Australia has been driven mostly by immigration rather than births and deaths or natural organic growth. So over the last 10 years, 2.2 million residents have come from overseas. So quite substantial. So if that's an average of 220,000 per year coming from overseas. So if we close our borders totally, well, instantly you can see that's a drop of at least that amount. The growth rate for the last sort of 4 or 5 years has been hovering around 1.6%, of which we could assume 1% of that would be migration and the other sort of 0.6% being the organic growth. Yep. So to close the borders is certainly going to have an impact. So some demographers and economists have done some modelling, and KPMG have been the most vocal about this in terms of what the impact's likely to be. So the previous forecast prior to COVID was that Australia was going to reach 29 million by the year 2030. KPMG are now forecasting that it could be as low as 28 million, so a million less over the next 10 years compared to what was expected. Their concern with that is they believe that that would be a cost to the economy of roughly $120 billion each year with that population growth declining.
Yeah.
And an ageing workforce is the other side of the equation. That's their worst case scenario if they say that we're, migration is stopped for another 12 months at least and no vaccine is found to allow the borders to open. They say even if a vaccine is found within 12 months, they believe that there'll still be a shortfall compared to forecast of around 420,000 by 2030. So still a drop. And they've equated that they've said 117 billion loss of GDP on an ongoing basis would equal an 80 billion drop in household disposable income, or $2,800 per person per year. But we know lower population growth slows the demand and would only have downward pressure on property prices. The other part of the equation, if we're going to look at the full picture here, is about, well, what's the births and deaths scenario likely to be? And the concern that some of the demographers have and economists have around Australia at the moment is that we're already at a historically low birth rate, currently sitting at 1.74. And if a birth rate falls below or that, down to around 1.5, that typically means that we're below the replacement rate, meaning we're having enough for the workforce, pay taxes to support the older population and pay for enough infrastructure. So as you'd be interested to hear, guys, there's a few articles about people being kinkier than usual, given that they're in lockdown and spending a lot more time at home. But there's no expectation that that's going to lead to an increased population. There's typically in a financial recession and pandemics, there's typically a drop in birth rates, a lot of it because people are uncertain of the economic future and don't want to have the burden of other children. So
I thought it was that you're stuck at home with your partner and you want to kill them by the end of it. So you're like, definitely not having another kid.
that's another part that was actually mentioned in some of this research that says that typically pandemics have a negative impact on relationships more than a positive. Meaning that people probably don't want to increase their families whilst this is a situation.
Yeah. So, I stayed in Queensland for a while.
Does that mean you're expecting soon, Steph?
No, I was just helping him not fight. I was keeping our relationship strong by staying in Queensland.
Understood. So overall, not a great story, but yeah, I guess we can look at it and say that's pretty much to be as expected given the circumstances. I guess the one thing we're all hoping for is that the lockdown and also when the Australian borders will open to allow new migration to start growing again. Even if Australia becomes healthy, there's no expectation that the rest of the world's going to be healthy enough that Australia will allow them to come here. I think we're going to be watching this for quite a period of time before we really see, but the modelling at the moment shows it's only going to be negative on population growth.
Yeah, interesting one to watch and see. Definitely something we'll be all looking at. Now, I might just throw over to Joel now. You're going to give us a little bit of a market update before we introduce Ross and talk to us a little bit about Afterpay.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Steph. And good to have you with us, Ross. I'm looking forward to delving into you and your business and getting a really good understanding of how we can all get ourselves back on track and look forward to Victoria opening back up again. Look, this week marked an interesting note or a nice little sign of optimism in the markets in that the US stock market, the world's most important stock market index being the S&P 500, finally got back to its all-time highs this week. That, in fact, marks the quickest recovery from a bear market. Now, if you define a bear market as a 20% decline from peak to trough, and then the recovery phase being recapturing back that loss, this bear market lasted for 110 days, or it took 110 days to get back to its to reach a fresh new high in terms of trading days, that is. Now, historically, when that has happened, and we've had very fast recoveries, the last five times this has occurred, the days to recovery has been back in 1958 was 234. So these are the fastest recoveries that the S&P has had from a bear market. Back in 1958, it took 234 days. In 1963, it took 319 days. In 1967, 171 days. In 1982, 178 days. And in 1989, 447 days to recover a 20% decline from peak to trough. This time around, 110 days. Now, when we go back and have a look at the prior five instances where the US stock market has recovered in a rather quick fashion in each of those instances, we've seen that the performance of the US stock market's been a little bit mixed. Over sort of a 1 and a 2 month basis, we've actually lost money on a 1 month basis, and on a 2 month basis, we've made money, but only by 1.8% and in 60% of the times. On a three-month basis, we're positive 100% of the time for a return for a median return of 1.6%. And over a six-month basis, it then gets a little bit mixed again, and only a 60% success rate with a median return of 7.4%. But then over a one-year basis, we can see that the median return is 13.3% for a 100% success basis. So it tends to sort of coincide with the fact that a strong recovery probably means that stock markets have rallied, well, obviously have rallied really strong. They probably need a little bit of time then to digest those gains that have occurred, or that recovery gain that has occurred over the next sort of 3 to 6 months as everyone tries to figure out exactly which direction the economy ends up truly going. And then it tends to get back on a more stable footing after about 6 months. And then over a 12-month period, we can see that generally it's positive for stocks over the next 12 months. Another interesting point today, we have a portfolio holding in our investment portfolio, Afterpay. Afterpay has been a big winner for us and our clients over the last 9 months since we've owned the stock. We're up around about 150% in that period of time. Not a bad outcome for Afterpay this week. How about finding an extra $25 million in your back pocket? Afterpay had announced on the 7th of July that it expected to report earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization of $20 to $25 million back just on the 7th of July. It then did a capital raising off the back of that, which we participated in, at $66. So this was just 5 weeks ago, or six weeks ago. And then when it reported its earnings this week, what they were expecting just 6 weeks ago to come in at around $20 to $25 million ended up being $44 million.
Jeez.
So on the back of that, you can see that the share price has recovered and it's gone on to hit again new all-time highs, rising 82%. So that's a doubling of their actual profit before tax in just a six-week period of time.
Wow.
Yesterday and today, there is an Afterpay Day sale where they've partnered with a whole host of online retailers to give discounts when using Afterpay.
Right, okay. This sounds a little bit similar to Singles Day or Black Friday.
Black Friday, yeah.
And Cyber Monday. So, yeah, this, who knows where this could lead to, but certainly talk about a business that's firing on all cylinders. Afterpay share price absolutely cratered during the COVID-19 madness, as many investors fretted about whether or not its business model would stack up in a time of pandemic. Well, they've certainly shown them the share price lost about 80% of its value at the peak of the decline to recover all of that and then some, and go in and set new all-time highs. And then finding an extra 100% in earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization within 6 weeks. Not a bad outcome.
Does it say anything about the age demographic that are using Afterpay? Because I'd be thinking that it would be quite a younger audience, but I might be mistaken.
Look, I believe that the vast majority of users of the Afterpay platform and its competitor Zip are generally the millennial generation.
Yeah.
The older generation grew up on credit cards, where much of the millennials and the generation that's coming in behind the millennials are very much getting used to using this buy now, pay later form of transactions. They don't tend to like the credit card, and they've really adapted that almost lay-by type payment arrangement.
I wonder what they're buying. There'd be a whole lot of athleisure, I'd be assuming, with that. Because you're just sitting at home, so.
Yeah, clothes, trinkets, athleisure. It's generally smaller items. Most of the transactions are around sort of a couple of $100, not much more than that. But interestingly enough, even though we've gone through this pandemic, Afterpay, you would think that going through a severe recession and seeing unemployment creep up, that Afterpay may have some problems with their losses on transactions. One of the things that was driving the improvement in their profit result was the fact that its collections, or its net transaction loss, had actually improved by 17 percentage points. So it was forecasted to come in at 0.38% of underlying sales. It actually came in 17 basis points better than that, which helped dramatically improve the before tax profit for Afterpay. So not only are they growing extraordinarily fast in the world's biggest economy in the United States, they dominate here in Australia, but they're also finding that their business model shows resilience in a downturn, which is which is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, probably the big difference there is that the typical repayment timeframe on an Afterpay transaction is only a few months. So this is not like your old credit card system where you have a credit card debt and once you're in debt, it might last years. You're going to get repayments really quick. So probably most of the debts that are on Afterpay's books right now is from purchases in the last 1, 2, and 3 months. And the only people making purchases in the last 1, 2, and 3 months are the people with stable employment. And that's the group of people who at home have employment, but are also at home in lockdown, well, in Victoria anyway, in lockdown with nothing to do but to shop online. So I can totally see why in the lockdown situation they're booming. And if that's and this is not just an Australian company, they've got global reach, I believe, Joel. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why you're getting this huge expansion overseas.
So you don't think anyone on JobKeeper's using Afterpay? I think my younger sister's been giving it a bit of a nudge. So.
not that they're not. It's just that people on JobKeeper don't have the level of disposable income or job security
if they're not at home with their parents.
Well, there you go. That's a different level of security.
It is. I've just got to ask before we wrap this segment up, have you used Afterpay yourself? Has anyone used it? Have you used it, Louis?
I haven't, but my wife has used it enough to know how it works. Mm-hmm. She's not a heavy user of it, but it's pretty well ingrained in a lot of areas. I can't think of an online retailer that I've used that doesn't have payment by credit card or PayPal or ZipPay or Afterpay. Pretty well ingrained in just about every shopping cart now.
Yeah. What about you, Ross? Have you used it?
No, I haven't. Like Louis said, I don't know of any online retailer either that doesn't have it now. It just seems to be part of the landscape.
Yeah, that's so true. Brett, have you used it?
No, avoided the temptation so far. As the others alluded to, I've seen it, been prompted to use it, but haven't indulged it yet.
Yeah, and Joel, I know you're not a big user of it, so you just buy everything on your card. So it's just cash. It's funny, it's just changed the way you do things, though. I remember the old lay-by system where you'd go in and they'd highlight off what your next payment was. No longer.
It's a repackage of that old concept.
Exactly
the
right.
Lay-by concept. Except you get delivery of your goods up front.
Yeah, even better. Anyway, we better wrap this section up. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Okay, welcome back, guys. So we're now going to have a chat with Ross DiVincenzi, who owns RossFit. And I suppose everyone's wondering why we've got Ross with us on the program. But Ross, your business is all about optimizing performance, which is very much aligned with the stock market and what these guys do. So I'd love to hear a little bit about how you started RossFit.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, and I suppose just to expand on the link that maybe isn't always obvious, because it's a discussion I have with my clients all the time around the link between our own health, our own vitality, and how we function in the world, how we perform in a business setting, how we manage things like memory loss, waning focus, you know, energy drops in the afternoon. Like, they have a huge impact to the way we, you know, the way we go through the world. And at the end of the week, how many of our tasks have we got done and how many of our tasks did not get done because, you know, we were hitting an energy wall at 3 p.m. every day. And it's huge. And I suppose to answer your question, Steph, like I got into this industry by mistake, really. I sort of dropped into it. I was a soldier for 10 years. And I actually, I got out of the military because of a serious back injury. And I was actually at university studying international relations and economics with the goal of actually getting back into government work. But as I said, I had a serious back injury and some health issues and all of this. So I went on this journey of trying to get better. And in the process of sort of going through that, you know, I saw would have been over a dozen different practitioners to overcome the serious, you know, pretty much a broken back that I had. And in the process of doing that, I discovered integrative health. I discovered that the health of my gut and the health of my entire, all the systems of my body was having a direct impact on my back being able to heal, which was groundbreaking because that was totally polar opposite to what a lot of people were telling me. So that sort of led to I discovered a man by the name of Paul Check and learned a bit about his system based in California, and then found one of his practitioners in Australia based in Sydney who I went and worked with. The course of about 6 months, he took me from being someone that couldn't sit down. Like, you know, just the flight up to Sydney was a nightmare because I would be in excruciating pain sitting down, to 6 months later being able to start running again. And, you know, 6 months after that, I was able to reinitiate all of the sports I loved, like mountaineering and rock climbing and obstacle course races and, you know, and everything in between. That made me realize how, I suppose, fascinating the human body is and how fascinating it is to, for me to start learning this really close connection between the core principles of health and how we integrate it into our life and then how much we can get out of this life that we have, you know, like how much vitality we've got. And that's partly why my business is called Optimizing Performance, because it's trying to utilize these pillars of health to reach peak performance. So we don't just go through life surviving, but we thrive. Like we reach our genetic potential. And I mean, who doesn't want to reach their genetic potential?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Ross, just a question about your military experience. What were you doing as part of the military, and did you ever serve at Afghanistan or Iraq or any of those war-torn countries?
Yeah, I joined the military in year 11, actually. So I was 17 and I joined as a reservist. And my goal was I wanted to do the hardest job that the military had. So the research I did, I discovered that was an infantry soldier, a rifleman. When I transferred to full-time, which was like 3 weeks after I finished year 12. So I deployed once as an infantry soldier to East Timor. That was in 2003. And that was really interesting. And in a 6 month deployment, my platoon commander had it fixated in his mind that we would do more fighting patrols on the border between East and West Timor than any other platoon. So we spent about 100 days patrolling the border, which in terms of harsh environments to operate in, the jungles of East Timor are probably some of the worst places in the world. The humidity is insane. Just being able to get through some of the places or some of the foliage is just so intense. So I remember there was one day where we moved a kilometer. It took us a day to go a kilometer. We were using machetes to just wade through this insanely high grass that was thick, and it was crazy. And then I went and studied a language actually through the Defence Force. I studied Persian Farsi, and I did a year-long course, which by the end of that, you're fairly fluent. So I had the option of, I suppose, looking down the path of Special Forces. Languages are very helpful in that role, or intelligence. And I went down the intelligence path, and then served in Special Operations Command as an intelligence operator. And I deployed to Afghanistan in that role, and East Timor in that role again.
So I would imagine that as a military person who's gone through that extensive training, that there would probably be some crossover in terms of what you've learned there, and it feeds into some of the things that you're doing here today as well. Is there any benefit from having had that experience around maybe mental toughness and being able to push yourself and in times like this? Are you seeing any correlations with some of those mental challenges that people are going through today?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I mean, what I tell people about my military career is, look, most of the skills that I learned, the specific skills of the soldier, you don't really use, or you hope not to have to use in your daily life as a civilian, right? But it's sort of like when you go to university, you learn these basic research skills and a lot of sort of grounding stuff that gets you through your professional life. And it's similar. Having that military background, it's the resilience, it's getting used to change that you can't control. And what are we living in right now? An environment where there's huge change and a lot of it we can't control. And to be honest, I love this. Like, this is a really exciting time to be here. And, you know, like, it's horrible seeing, you know, what's going on and, you know, so many people getting sick and dying. But in terms of the direct impact to me and my business and the world around me, it is really like every day you wake up and you don't know what you're going to see in the news. It's so having the perspective of just rolling with the punches and not, you know, learning to accept what you can't control and then focus on the things you can.
How do you stay so positive, though, throughout something like this? I mean, you've gone, obviously, East Timor was a very different experience to what we're going through with this pandemic and being locked in a home, but we're still so unhappy at the moment. The general population, and particularly Victoria, is so unhappy. How do you keep your mental spirits sort of high during something like this?
There's two parts to that answer. I think to answer that, I'll go back a step and say, like, the foundation of my business, or the philosophy of my business, and what I coach and teach to clients is the four pillars of health. So nutrition, movement, rest and repair, and mindset. Now, those first three, movement, nutrition, rest and repair, those are things that, like, they're tangible. Like, you know, what food I'm putting in my mouth, you can go see a nutritionist, you can read about it, you can make changes. I'm not going to put the croissant in my mouth, and instead I'm going to put in some vegetables. With the movement, it's similar again. You know, I can choose to do exercise every day. I can have a program that a trainer writes for me. And then on the rest and repair, I can make sure I get 8 hours sleep a night. The last one, though, mindset, like, that's a lot trickier. It's tricky to just change your mindset. You can't, you know, it's all well and good for me to just say to you and the listeners, well, you just got to be more positive. You just got to wake up in the morning and be more positive. Now, that's great. And I'm sure no one else has ever heard that before, right? that's the trick. I'm just going to be more positive.
It's the worst advice.
It's the worst advice, because it's the hardest thing to do is to change our perspective. What I do when I wake up in the morning is I think, you know, partly what's on the wall behind me, you know, just appreciating life, appreciating the fact that I'm alive. Gratitude has a very different energy to where we can often end up, which is comparison. I view them as the polar opposite. Gratitude and comparison. And as soon as you start comparing yourself to what I had pre-pandemic, I want that back. Or, or, you know, the person that earns more money than me. Like, as soon as we have that energy, life seems a lot grayer. So what we do is we don't directly start focusing on the mindset stuff. You get those other three pillars as solid as possible. Because if you've got better nutrition coming into your body, if you're hydrated effectively, if you're getting enough rest, I mean, we all know this, yeah? If you've had a week of amazing sleep, you can tackle more, you can handle more. If you've been sleep deprived, you know, you emotionally you start going up and down. Like you'll find you'll snap at people more. You know, somebody goes bad at work and then like it seems like it's 10 times worse than it actually is. And all that's changed is we haven't maintained those pillars of health.
And there's so much more that we know now about the brain chemistry and how our sleep and our food does impact our brain chemistry and all those, not just our mood, but our thought patterns as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The advancements of what we learned in terms of the link between gut health and brain health is just fascinating as well. You know, we know that if someone suffers, and it doesn't even need to be a very severe trauma to the head. So let's say they were in a, you know, they were riding their bike and they fell off their bike and they, you know, hit their head on the ground. That can be enough to pretty much destroy the microbiome in your gut.
Wow.
So we're pretty
much even linked to that.
Yeah. It's fascinating the correlations back and forth. And I think with some people or most people probably have experienced this from time to time where they've eaten something and then they've had brain fog for the afternoon, or they've the common one, the obvious one is the link between sugar and our focus. Mm-hmm. So we have a mountain of sugar and we've got, you know, as long as it's not a crazy amount, we might have a period of pretty good focus. So we're seeing a direct link between the food we're eating and our cognitive function, our ability to focus, our ability to you know, perform mentally. But I suppose just to sort of cap off on your question, Steph, about how do you stay positive? Ultimately, and I think this is something I learned partly through my experience in the military and then partly through really going on in the years after that and exploring everything from, you know, spirituality to optimizing mental performance, it's really starting to connect with that understanding that I can't control what's going on around me. All that I can control is my perspective of what's going on around me.
Yeah.
And when you really realize that, then whenever you're in a shitty situation, you can view that slightly differently. You can view this pandemic as an opportunity.
Mm.
Opportunity to, like, maybe your business has gone, you know, maybe you've lost your business or you've lost your job. You still have the ability to view that as an opportunity. As hard as it may seem, you have all of the power to do that. No one's taken that away from you. Nelson Mandela and what he got out of prison time, you know, like, he's probably one really powerful example of someone that had the ability to choose to have a particular perspective on what from an outside would look like one of the worst situations ever you could possibly be in.
He probably wouldn't have been president if he hadn't spent more than 2 decades in prison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was going to ask too, going back to sort of what you're saying, but do you think that routine is another really important one? For me, when I seem to lose a routine with my day, I can't tend to get motivated or structured. Or, I mean, given this pandemic's come through, it was really hard to even go out for a walk because your whole day is sort of thrown by not, if you don't make the time or you don't make that time for breakfast or a routine, I seem to get thrown. Do you think that that's something that's really helpful for people?
Oh, 100%. And I actually did a video blog on this just after the pandemic started. And back to what I was saying earlier, where knowing what you can control and what you can't control. So we can't control a lot of these external things that are going on with the pandemic, the changes to the economy, the changes to the industry that we work in. What we can control is, you know, by and large, the food that's going into our mouth, how much movement we're doing. Yeah, you know, in Melbourne right now, it's only an hour of exercise outside or moving outside, but we can do a lot inside. Like, there's a lot of things we can still control, I believe, and it's a pretty common sort of understanding that if we have a solid routine and if we can find a solid routine in as much of our life as possible, that's going to go a long way to supporting how positive we are, but also just helping us manage the instability and the unknown of what's going on outside. Get up in the morning, I always have my cold shower. I always drink a liter of water before my first meal. Like, I've got all these little routines that I do no matter what. And, you know, it's rare that there's something that's going to happen in the outside world that's going to affect these little safety nets that I've created that we coach to our clients. That it just, you know, it becomes this little this safe zone that you've got in your routine and your life that allows you to then have more resilience to manage the instability that's going on outside. I mean, yeah, like, you know, everyone's got their weak links. You know, if I talk about those pillars of health again, you know, rest, repair, nutrition and movement. Out of those three, my weak link is rest, repair. Like, I like doing, you know, we talk about performance versus potential. So you're either in a potential building phase or you're in a performance doing phase. And I want to be performing and doing all the time. But the problem with that is if we don't cultivate energy, if we don't go into that potential building phase, then ultimately you can't perform. So, yeah, so my weak link, and it has been during the pandemic, is I've been, you know, pivoting my business a lot. I've been training a lot because I love training. But that's also led to me getting sick twice in the last, you know, in the last 4 months. So that's my weak link.
Ross, tell me about some of your client experiences. You've got a few clients who are high-performing people in their careers and their business lives. What are some of their stories and some of the things that have made a difference to their performance?
Awesome question. Yeah, you're right. So our client base is everywhere from people that are quite, you know, I suppose their vitality is quite low. They're definitely not thriving. They're barely surviving. And then our role as their health coach is to help build them up and get them at least to a point of surviving. And then we can start adding on to that. So that can be people that have got illnesses or serious injuries or chronic fatigue, that sort of thing. But then the other side is more the performance side. And that's people that come and see us that are already doing really well. They've already got a lot of the baseline stuff sorted. They're high achievers, they're CEOs, they're business owners, or they're athletes who want to find that extra 5-10%. And I was chatting with you about this recently, Louie, about how you know, when I start with a client, you always look at the low-hanging fruit. If someone's running from one sugar high to the next, there's no point talking with them about nootropics and, you know, getting them on a fully organic diet and, you know, speaking about intermittent fasting and ketogenic and ice baths and things like that, because their blood sugar levels are going through the roof. Their chemical stress state in their body most of the time. There's no way we can start playing with getting that extra 5 or 10%. So that's always the first thing. We look at the building blocks, the low-hanging fruit. But with a lot of these high achievers, they've already done a bit of their own research and they're, you know, they're eating a fairly good diet. We might tweak things here and there. I always go back and with the diet stuff, look at their vegetable intake and make sure we're getting enough vegetable intake, because that's a really sort of common error in sort of building just a good base diet. Then we look at things like you know, like herbal nootropics or basically natural cognitive enhancing supplements. And then adding in things like intermittent fasting, because intermittent fasting is such a powerful way to basically start separating the body into different stages throughout the day. So we're in a functioning stage where we need to be on point, because I'm on a podcast with UGC and I've got to make sure that my brain is working for this. I don't want to be digesting breakfast right now. I haven't eaten anything today and I'm not going to eat anything for another 3 hours, because my mornings are about performing and output. I want my cortisol levels to be high. I don't want to be in a rest repair state, because rest repair is great when we're laying on the couch in the evening and we've just had dinner. But it's not what we want in the morning when we're aiming to be as sharp as we can be, as fast as we can be, as productive as we can be. So it's about teaching these high achievers how to almost biohack their body to be just redlining in certain areas at certain times based on the rhythm of their life, of their work, of their professional life.
What about as far as diet's concerned? A lot of people say, you know, you can food prep, or, you know, you could have this strict diet or follow this. I often find that when it's really strict, I tend to fall off it. Or, you know, how do you encourage people to food prep and have their meals ready? Or what's the best approach, you know, to keep people on track?
What you're asking is it's really that's a coaching question. That, as in, that's more we're talking about the psychology of people than we're talking about, well, what it's not just black and white, is it? And when we're talking about the coaching of people and psychology, there's no one size fits all. So there isn't a direct answer to that. That yes, I get everyone to meal prep because that doesn't work for some people. I personally meal prep because it is the most time efficient process. Like thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner every afternoon. I mean, firstly, that's wasting brain power that could be going to work, or it could be going to something else. I got this from Tim Ferriss years ago, the concept of batching. You batch tasks, right? So if I just batch my meal prep for the week, or at least the planning of it, maybe I don't execute it, but I organize it on a Sunday. Now I don't have to put any brain power into what is my food going to be for the next 7 days.
Because I know for us, when we're incredibly busy, we tend to call Deliveroo because that's an easy way to, you know, get your food delivered, because we haven't thought about it or planned your life out. And then you quickly think, well, you know, that's where you end up eating such a bad meal because you haven't really put the time and energy into planning your life. So,
yeah, I remember, I think it was Barack Obama said when he was in the White House that he would only have, was it 3 shirts and 3 ties or something like that? And he would just rotate them. But the was, and I remember he got interviewed, I've listened to an interview with him, and he was saying he doesn't want to have to think about what clothes he puts on.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to have to waste energy, like brain power on, oh, do I go the black one or do I go the, you know, the red one?
Yeah, you get decision fatigue.
Yeah. Yeah. So I suppose the only difference between that and if we're talking about nutrition is I don't want people to walk away from this going, okay, cool, so I'm just going to have 3 meals. And I'm only going to eat 3 different meals, because one key to optimal performance, or to great health, great nutrition and optimal performance, is variety in your diet. You need to have as much variety as possible. And the common thing that I see is people eat half a dozen different foods, you know, sometimes cooked in slightly different ways, but it's half a dozen different vegetables different ingredients. And they just put that on repeat. You know, they have their chicken, they have their broccoli, they have their rice, and they have that, you know, 5 days a week. So, yeah, so unfortunately there's no direct answer, but definitely for some people at the start, I get them on meal delivery services. If they're high performers and they don't have the time to be putting amazing food prep in, to be eating really good quality food, then, you know, we get them using meal delivery service for sure. And then over time, we maybe get them, start educating them around how they can efficiently, you know, complete meal prep.
And Ross, for people out there that are listening, how do they get in contact, and what's the best approach? I mean, what do you offer as a service to choose from? Tell me what the sort of menu of things that we could go through for people.
At the moment, we're still operating. It looks a little bit different. We're seeing people only over video call versus face-to-face. But outside of pandemic, during pandemic, it doesn't matter. We're still predominantly, or in essence, providing the same service. We work with people in a one-on-one health and performance coaching setting, where we complete quite a thorough health and lifestyle assessment of new clients. And then we work with them to implement, or we coach them through the process of implementing the changes and implementing the habits and routines that are going to get them to where they want to be. Be that they want to move away from an injury or an illness, or be that they want to move towards a professional goal that we're supporting them to get to. So that's really the core way that we work with people and sort of help them sort of move in the right direction. And the other way is we offer fitness and wellbeing classes. So now during lockdown, we're doing that all over Zoom, and it actually works surprisingly well, because, you know, we've got people all over Victoria at the moment spending a lot of time inside. If they can at least be doing effective exercise and restorative practices like yin yoga and meditation from their living room with support of one of our coaches, that's a lot better than them just spending time watching Netflix.
Yeah, so good. And where do we find you online? What's your web address?
So you can go to my website, rossfit.com.au, and you can find out more about those two services there. We're also on, you know, on Facebook, Rossfit Optimizing Performance, and Instagram. And you can also direct email me, ross@rossfit.net.
Yeah, fabulous to have you with us today, and really insightful information, certainly something we all need at the moment, particularly in stage the next lot of lockdown, and God knows how long this is going to go for. So really appreciate you joining us today and giving all us that information.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now we're going to throw to our final segment for the day, and Ross, you're going to stay around for this, but it's You Can't Be Serious. So I might actually lead with Brett, because you've always got a good one for us, Brett.
Gee, thanks, Steph. I'm glad you think so.
You've been a bit quiet there.
Yeah, understand. Well, I was fascinated with Ross's story. It was great to hear. Thanks for coming along. So one thing I came across this week, Father's Day's around the corner. Victoria's been in lockdown. There's a lot of, wives and girlfriends that are missing their husbands coming back smelling a beer from the pub. So to alleviate this, our good old friends at Victoria Bitter have released a fragrance for men to wear.
Yuck. That will be something fabulous. I'm not.
They call the name of thirst. So, Joel, there's a bottle coming your way.
Oh,
Does it come with the extra smell of cigarettes?
No, it doesn't.
No, they're going to partner with Marlboro or Peter Jackson on those.
How about you, Louis? Have you got one for us?
So really good to have Ross here to talk about these things and really, in one way, improving people's lives and extending people's lives. But Ross, what would you do about this? If you lived in the Northern Territory, you got to look out for another life-threatening thing, which is that when you go fishing, you might get hit by a fish and die. Oh, and tragically, that has actually happened to someone in the last week. Person was fishing in a boat, and an 18-kilogram mackerel leapt out of the water and smacked him straight into the chest while he was sitting in his fishing boat. So that's just a crazy story for you. One more reason not to live in the Northern Territory.
Well, they won't let us in anyway, so... But pretty sad way to go. Imagine that at the funeral being, how did he pass away? He's been killed by a fish. So not a great one. And Ross, have you got one as well?
Yeah, I do. Mine's a bit different. Mine isn't new news, though. Mine's old news that often people don't know. I think it's fascinating, though. So X-ray has been around for just over 100 years. And when X-ray was it was actually discovered by accident. And when it was first discovered, they didn't realize there was any radiation or negative radiation that would actually hurt humans. So X-rays were, you could find X-ray machines in shoe stores. So you could go into a shoe shop and there'd be a live X-ray machine, and people would just be like putting, the kids would be going up, putting their feet And this went on for years until, in fact, I think it was someone related to the inventor died from a cancer from X-ray, and I think that's what started the process of realizing that it's actually very, very
unhelpful. Oh. Yeah. God, that's a fascinating fact. No idea about that.
Child abuse.
Yeah, that's right. That's how to get rid of you.
X-ray stands for unknown. That's why they came up with X-ray. X is for unknown. Because it was they didn't really understand the process at all when it first got developed. Yeah.
How fascinating. Wow. Well, Joel's not feeling particularly at his optimal performance today, so he doesn't have a segment for today. But
he's got a lift.
Thank you guys, thank you for the three of you and Ross for filling in on Joel's behalf there. But thanks again for joining us on the podcast this morning. And Have a fabulous weekend, even though it's in lockdown. I hope we do get a bit of sunshine and you all get outside and follow Ross's advice to make sure that you're getting your walks in and, you know, focused on your mental health. But thanks again for everything.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
See you soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay, I think we're done.